The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
I was in Hong Kong when SARS hit. They kept it locked down, but I thought, that, I'm special. So I went in, had a look, found out it didn't exist.
SARS didn't exist?
No. The whole thing was just a series of unconnected respiratory infections. Took me under an hour to discover that there was no causal link. So I filed my report, and within a week, I was discredited, research destroyed, fired. Well, I tried speaking up. Everyone thought I'd just gone a bit David Icke.
Oh, but people died. SARS was...
Started in November 2002. It lasted precisely 7 months. By summer 2003, it no longer existed. The pandemic affected just 8,422 people and killed 916. Do you know how many people die each year from random respiratory problems? SARS did not exist. Next question. Why did they do it? Answer, I don't know. All I know was within the next few weeks, I was embroiled in a sex scandal. Professor Pervert.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, February the 21st, 2024. I'm Bob Metz.
And I'm Robert Vaughn.
And this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online.
Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right wing, it's just right.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Released in its entirety on Just Right's various video platforms this past Monday, February 19, Robert's discussion with Canadian lawyer Chess Crosby, a spokesman for the National Citizens Inquiry, is accessible with a single mouse click on Just Right's homepage. You can pick between our Rumble, Odyssey, BitChute, and YouTube channels. Note, however, that due to the nature of today's subject, the discussion was not immediately made available on YouTube, although I understand that a redacted version of the show is in the works for that sadly censorious platform. In fact, today's audio broadcast version of their discussion zeroes in on the broader aspects and considerations behind the information war regarding the entire COVID-19 fraud. And in line with the National Citizens Inquiry objective of getting the word out about their findings, in our audio version today, you'll find audio bites here and there throughout today's show featuring Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson's January 24th discussion with Ken Drysdale, chairman of the NCI, who has some of his own insights to share about the inquiry's conclusion. Every Canadian should be made aware of these findings, but sad to say, the Fourth Estate virtually no longer exists, leaving it up to shows like ours to mitigate the mainstream media's abandonment of journalism. So that's exactly what we plan to do. Right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org, hear us on WBCQ Shortwave, follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible.
We're joined today by Chess Crosby, a Canadian lawyer and spokesman for the National Citizens Inquiry. Good day, Mr. Crosby.
Mr. Vaughn, good day to you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I've seen you appear on a number of videos expressing the final report from the National Citizens Inquiry, which went Canada-wide, 305 witnesses, 94 expert testimonies. I understand that 63 Canadian officials were invited to attend, but none deemed to grace you with their presence. For those not familiar with the National Citizens Inquiry, if you could perhaps start off by explaining what it is and how it formed and why it formed, please.
Sure, Robert. One thing you could mention as well, not only did officials not deign to grace the citizens of Canada with their presence and explain their actions, which I guess suggests something about their level of confidence and their ability to do so. The mainstream media, the legacy media, which includes big tech probably these days, they saw fit to basically ignore the National Citizens Inquiry as well. So as you said, it was a group of citizens coming together and deciding that if citizens didn't do an inquiry into the governmental response to the COVID crisis, then it was most unlikely that any government would. In other words, it was we do it or no one was going to do it. That's how it looked then, going back a year and a half ago. And in fact, that's still the case with one kind of minor exception. That's in Alberta. It wasn't a public inquiry that was conducted there. It was a review into changing legislation without public hearings in such a way as to make sure that people's rights and freedoms are more respected should there be another similar, you know, pandemic type event. So I think the original premise that we had, that if we didn't do an inquiry to learn lessons from what happened and document it for all time as a legacy for all Canadians, government wasn't going to do it. And in fact, here we are now in 2024, and there's no indication that any government wants to do it.
As a matter of fact, I think if our audience was to go onto the internet and search for National Citizens Inquiry under news, you would find very few articles. I did it myself yesterday and found one, actually from the CBC, of a local hearing in, I believe it was Winnipeg or in Manitoba. But other than that, it was completely blacked out, ignored. And I think that's telling, because usually criminals, ne'er-do-wells, people who are culpable, hide from the light. And that, I think, is exactly why the National Citizens Inquiry was shunned by those in power. Do you concur?
Yeah, no, you put that well. That little story in Winnipeg did at least acknowledge we existed, but it didn't delve into the subject matter of what we were finding out or any of the evidence. And that was the only recognition from mainstream media that we ever got. There was coverage, as you mentioned, from alternative media like Epoch Times, possibly the Western Standard, possibly Rebel News, and you can go on a list of others. That was it. Those media, which are influenced by the dominant narrative or have bought into the dominant narrative or have been bought out by the dominant narrative, such as the money that Trudeau is shoveling into mainstream media to buy their loyalty, they saw fit to ignore this historic event, the National Citizens Inquiry.
Let's get into some of the legal aspects of the findings of the National Citizens Inquiry. Your expertise, though you're not practicing now, was class action lawsuits. What do you think might be the outcome from the inquiry's report regarding, perhaps as an impetus to start class action lawsuits against those who perpetrated the lockdowns against Canadian citizens?
Well, for those who, you know, despite the best efforts of governments and mainstream media like the CBC in particular, who's supposed to be a public broadcaster, but is more accurately described as state-sponsored media, for those who know of our existence, there's a treasure trove of information there, many witnesses, including many eminent expert witnesses. And if anybody is interested in litigation, be it class actions or some other kind of litigation to recover money for damages, then it's a treasure chest to go to for inspiration, for witnesses, for fact-finding and recommendations. So I'd recommend it to, well, every citizen of Canada to have a look at that report. So it's a source of inspiration. The evidence in it, in my understanding of things anyway, from my life as a lawyer, you can't just give a judge a copy of the National Citizens Inquiry report and say, here's the evidence. You've got to line up your own evidence and prove your facts and prove the opinions of experts in a court proceeding, if it ever does come to that, because oftentimes things settle, of course. but it's a great starting point and it's a great awakening point. We're still in a period where we're unwinding psychologically from the damage that was done, the hysteria, the mass formation effect, mass hysteria, whatever you want. You know, there are a number of words and labels you could use to describe it. But most of us collectively left our senses during the real intense period of COVID in 2020, 2021, less so in 22. We're coming out of that now, and the judges are beginning to come out of it too. They're part of society, let's not forget. So I think there's an ongoing loss of trust in the public as to what they're being told through the dominant narrative, I'll say, or the government-sponsored narrative, which is reflected in mainstream media. I think there was a poll recently in Canada that only about a third of people think that mainstream media is trustworthy. That's only about a third. So people are increasingly looking for other sources of reliable information. That's a phenomenon that's not going to stop. So that means that people are looking for sources of reliable information like your podcast.
So I want to introduce to you the chairman of the National Citizens Inquiry. His name is Ken Drysdale. He's an executive engineer with over 40 years of experience as a professional engineer, which includes 29 years experience in the development and management of national and regional engineering businesses. Ken is currently retired from full-time practice as a consulting engineer, but continues to be active in the area of forensic engineering investigations as well, and preparation of expert reports and expert testimony at trial, arbitrations, and mediations. He has testified as expert witness at trials in Manitoba and Ontario. He has acted as the arbitrator and mediator in disputes. And I guess that set him up very nicely to be the chairman of the National Citizens Inquiry, which literally had to combine everything that he's spent a lifetime learning into one incredible initiative that helps to set us free and have incredible information. Ken Drysdale, thank you for being with us. We're excited to hear about, after it's all said and done, how you feel about the results of the National Citizens Inquiry and, you know, what is coming out of that now.
Well, you know, that's a great question. The scope of the National Citizens Inquiry was very broad. What they said to us when we started was, you know, we're going to ask Canadians to come and testify, and they were not restricted in what they could testify about. So we had testimony about, you know, what happened in schools, what happened financially, what happened in the medical system, what happened with churches, what happened with just about every aspect of society. So somehow we had to pull all of that information, you know, from over 300 witnesses into some kind of a cohesive report that would first be accurate to what the witnesses said, and secondly, would end up in an instrument that people could use.
Maybe to remind everyone of what transpired and give them a sample of some of those 300 witnesses, we could show them this. Take a look.
We are a citizen organized, a citizen run, a citizen-funded initiative. We don't have a single large donor. We're doing this all on our own, almost exclusively by volunteers. We want to start a national dialogue.
COVID-19 pandemic has been an unprecedented event as far as Canada, the countries in the world are concerned.
The fact that in Canada people are still afraid.
It has not been disclosed to the general public the contents of the material.
So in that moment, she framed every unvaccinated person, including her guest on the show, as a danger to public safety.
What's interesting also is that nobody can name a single real world vaccine success story where COVID rates went down at a nursing home or a funeral home after the vax rollout.
You're in a cancer clinic and you feel abused by everybody because they didn't want to know about you. They wanted to know your mask. They wanted to make personal contact with your mask, and that was the horror of it.
How did we get to this point?
A nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people. That's still where we are in this nation, Canada. Because no government, no authority wants to inquire into its handling or mishandling of the last 3 years' response to COVID-19.
Wow. So obviously you all thought, you know, those of you that put this together and people with the kind of background that you have, you must have thought this is worth it. We have got to get this truth out. We've got to let the public see what has really happened.
Well, you know, it was really a humbling experience because I had had some previous experience in reviewing things with the COVID-19 mandates. I had written a report called the Investigative Report, 89-page report. And so I went into this thinking I knew a lot. But, you know, I was really humbled personally on the stories, the in-depth stories that I heard, the absolute pain of Canadians, you know, the losses of loved ones, the losses of family ties, deaths in the family, that people were being ignored by their doctors. The government was stepping in between doctors and people. You know, people were executed by the government mandates. And I'm thinking specifically about Sheila Lewis. And I use that term on purpose. For folks who don't know her story, she was a lady that was in line to get a lung transplant in Alberta. And she had gone through all of the preparatory work to get that lung transplant. And that led her up to the late summer and fall of 2022. That's important, by the way. Because at that point, we already knew that the vaccines were ineffective. They were unsafe. They never stopped spread. They never stopped you from getting COVID. As a matter of fact, the CDC said one of the main risks with taking a vaccine was that it would give you COVID in the first 14 days. That's on the CDC website. That's not me saying that. In any case, so Sheila Lewis was afraid of taking that vaccine, and she got herself tested, and apparently she had antibodies. So she had already had COVID-19 and was immune to it. The doctors, however, insisted that she get the vaccine. She refused, and so they removed her from the transplant waiting list, knowing that she would die without that transplant. She went to the Alberta court. They turned her down. They went to the Court of Appeal. They turned her down. She tried to go to the Supreme Court of Canada, and the cowards there, the same cowards that were dancing in the, on commercials on TV during the lockdowns with masks on their faces, they refused to hear the case, and Sheila Lewis died about midsummer of 2023. And that's when we were still writing the report. So, you know, we not only were tasked with a gargantuan task of actually physically putting together a report, but we knew that she was potentially going to die. And we were racing to get the report done, hoping that that would change things. And when she died, it was a great shock to all of us.
Are you or a loved one suffering from a medical coincidence? You want proper medical care, but you don't want people sniffing around asking a whole bunch of questions about what might be causing your problem. At the Kauffman Institute for Coincidence, we won't look into the cause of your heart or other problem. We'll just fix it. That's right. We promise to only look at your symptoms. We won't get all curious looking for causes, because that could get your employer or your doctor into some legal hot water. And nobody wants that. At Kauffman, we understand that coincidence is now the leading cause of death.
Hey, we've got another coincidence over here.
If we want to operate at the speed of science, there's no time for looking for causes. No pesky questions about drugs or vaccines you may have been given. At Kauffman, we specialize in the effects and leave the causes to the conspiracy theorists. And let's be honest, we know the cause anyway. It was a coincidence, right? For each new patient, Kauffman's talented team of doctors strap on their blinders and look directly at the problem area, usually the heart, just like the CDC recommends. Our main campus now treats myocarditis, blood clots, heart arrhythmia, stroke, heart attack, magnetic skin, difficulty breathing, full body blisters and burning, convulsions, kidney failure, memory loss, cancer, sudden death, and much, much more. Give your coincidence the attention it deserves, but not the wrong kind of attention. at Kaufman. Schedule your appointment today at kaufmancoincidence.com and receive a doctor's note with a real sciencey sounding explanation to provide to your anti-vax friends, proving to them it was definitely not the vaccine that caused your coincidence. Kaufman, because coincidences happen pretty much all the time.
Official medical coincidence partner of the NFL.
There's been a decision recently from the Federal Court of Canada regarding the constitutionality of the declaration of the Emergencies Act, previously called the War Measures Act, by the Trudeau-Singh government to basically trample on the rights, quite literally, trample on the rights of the Freedom Convoy protesters in Ottawa. What is your take on that decision? I noticed that you had a discussion with Bruce Partey, a law professor, on it, which was fascinating. People can go to your site, National Citizens Inquiry, and find that interview, I think. But what's your take on that as a lawyer, and where somebody can take that declaration that it was unconstitutional and perhaps proceed from there legally?
You know, in talking to Bruce, he made the point that while it's worth observing that the government, without hardly an hour's hesitation, through Deputy Prime Minister Freeland, announced that they were appealing. Well, that was a political decision, because it's obvious they took no time to get legal advice about the merits of an appeal and whether it was legally meritorious. It was an entirely political decision, shooting from the hip. So one of the points that Bruce made is, in order for the government to succeed on the appeal, they have to win on basically four issues. You could use the analogy that you can't leap a chasm in four jumps. It's most unlikely to work. So the upfront decision was that, as a factual matter, the factual circumstances did not meet the tests spelled out in the Emergencies Act. The two tests spelled out. There is no crisis of national security. There was, in fact, no public order emergency. That was a fact finding by the judge, and using the test, applying it. So courts of appeal are supposed to be, and usually are, very respectful of fact finding. So there's a high burden on the government to show that the judge below somehow got it wrong.
Yeah. Now, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, during the lockdowns and the convoy, former Prime Minister of Newfoundland, Brian Peckford, was diligently out there in the weather explaining to people what the intent was, as he is the last living founder of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, what the intent was of the premiers at that time in drafting that document. And I interviewed Bruce Partey after he appeared and testified in front of the National Citizens Inquiry. Our conception of our rights and freedoms under the Charter is different from what it says under the Charter. The letter of the law is different from the understanding of the law. We may think we have these rights. It has been proven that we do not. What is your take on the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and how the courts have decided against the people in favor of Parliament when it comes to our rights?
Well, I think Bruce's analysis is, you know, actually fairly deep, and he goes into how the courts, and at the top of the whole pyramid is the Supreme Court of Canada, have gone down the road of recognizing positive rights, which the Americans would actually call entitlements to various government benefits, as opposed to negative rights, which is basically, you know, the right to be left alone by government as long as you're not harming society or other people. And his sort of larger and more fundamental point is, we've become a society in Canada, and certainly here in Newfoundland and Labrador, maybe more than the rest of Canada. You're a former resident, now living in New Brunswick, I think. We've become a culture which, when we have a social problem, we look to government to solve the problem. I've come to see that as a very dangerous attitude, because we're ceding authority over our lives by that kind of an attitude. There's a problem, government, you got to solve it. Oh, there's an issue, we may not be safe. There's a germ going around, government, you got to protect us and keep us safe. That's the road to more authoritarian government. And that's Bruce's larger point, which he also made in his testimony at the National Citizens Inquiry. Obviously, that's a deep political, cultural issue. And if we change and head in the other direction, that's going to take a long time.
I think that the cultural zeitgeist of Canada is one of Big Brother must provide. And as long as we have that attitude, we're not going to get out of this hole, and we're going to see more emergency act being invoked
again.
Yeah,
and so that's Bruce's larger point, is our expectation that government will solve our problems and keep us safe. And that informs the way the judges approach the interpretation of the charter. I'm not sure the defect is in the charter. If there's a defect, it's more in the way the judges have approached the charter. Unfortunately, many of us would say that the COVID crisis, not one of our important institutions really stood up for people who valued freedom and defended our rights. There was a collapse in all the institutions, from, you know, the mainstream media through the courts to the police. Every important institution, organized medicine has to be mentioned, that we might look to stand up for rights, failed to do so. And you can see that all the way through the report of the commissioners and all the way through the evidence of the National Citizens Inquiry. So we've got a lot of work to do collectively as a country.
Matthias Desmet wrote the book on mass formation. He didn't coin the term, but he made it popular, mass formation, where everybody all of a sudden goes in one direction like a herd. And I don't think it was gone unnoticed that you're right. Everybody went in that direction, with the exception of maybe 5, 10, 15% of the population. Every single institution, every single political party, barring perhaps the People's Party of Canada, were lockstep in implementing all of the measures that the so-called experts above us, the World Health Organization, CDC, Dr. Fauci in the States, Theresa Tam here in Canada, dictate to us. What do you make of that? That all of the political parties, let's just start with them, the political parties, progressive, conservative, in provincial parliaments, were perhaps some of the worst. Doug Ford, Blaine Higgs here in New Brunswick. Some of the worst measures were implemented by progressive conservatives. The Conservative Party of Canada went along with almost all of the measures. In fact, early on, the new leader of the Conservative Party, Erin O'Toole, wanted to invoke the Emergencies Act right at the beginning in 2020. That didn't happen, luckily. But NDP, Green, Liberal, PC, Conservative, all in lockstep. Can you explain that?
Yeah, but first of all, as a factual matter, Mr. O'Toole was removed by his own caucus around about the time of the Emergencies Act declaration and the Freedom Convoy presence in Ottawa. So you could conclude that the Conservative Party caucus and, frankly, the Conservative Party rejected that authoritarian approach from that particular leader. They since selected a different leader, and he's on the record as favoring medical freedom, no vaccine coercion. So right now, the leadership and the party seems to have a very different approach. I was there at the convention in Quebec City that voted on those resolutions, and there's a two-thirds vote in favor of medical freedom and no coercion, just for the record. Now, your question was again?
What do you make of the fact that all of these political parties were in lockstep? All of the provinces, all of the territories, the federal government, Singh at the time, the Conservative government, were all in lockstep regarding the measures that were being implemented to supposedly flatten the curve.
This stampede that people went through was not spontaneous. It was encouraged by officials and government leaders. And it was accomplished on the basis of the inculcation of fear in the population. It was, in fact, if you want to look at it this way, a rather sophisticated psychological operation, or psyops, delivered from above, from within governments, certainly from within the security state in the United States, The details of it are less clear here in Canada. We don't have as much evidence, but it was perpetrated by the state itself. How many people, officials and government leaders were, you know, in on the plan, so to speak, is hard to say. How many just got drawn along in the general stampede is also hard to say. But without the inculcation of fear, and I can remember listening to analysis from medical people that would have had you believe that we were all going to be dead in the streets with nobody left to pick up the bodies. Well, obviously, that was fear porn. So the government practiced fear porn to get people to do what they wanted. No country is great or preserves its greatness on the basis of fear. Franklin Delano Roosevelt spoke to that when he became president in 1932 at the height of the Depression. He said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." The fact that our governments tried to make us fearful shows the depth of their betrayal.
Arnold is absent.
Yeah, I don't think Arnold's absent the whole time I've known him.
Yeah, you know, he never gets sick. I guess it's probably because no germ would want to live in his body.
Arnold, will you take that mask off so we can understand what you're saying?
All I said was...
You know, it's nice to be safe, but you can carry flu prevention a little bit too far.
It strikes me, Ken, that one of the things that's coming up here, and I think will be a really hot topic, I was talking to a very important person in Canada this morning, but about excess deaths and the fact that nobody really wants to talk about that. And it's worldwide, you know, so, but Canada just mums the word from the press, from whatever. And meanwhile, if you go back to 2019 to what were the deaths are today, we've got a problem.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Denny Rancour is Canadian. Mm-hmm. He testified 3 times at the National Citizens Inquiry. He testified in French in Quebec City. He testified in Ottawa, and he testified in virtual hearings in September. And he talks in detail about that. And he also talks about one of the reasons he had to testify 3 times is that most of the data was available worldwide on excess mortality that he could analyze, but Statistics Canada didn't release it. They didn't release it till I think it was August or early September of last year, where just about every other country, including third world countries, had released that information. So Dr. Rancour, and I invite people to go and look at his testimony, he talks about that. He estimated that just because of mandates and vaccination adverse reactions alone in Canada, I believe he estimated 35,000 deaths. The other interesting thing about the death statistics for 2021, which just came out, by the way, in I think it was October of last year, they're showing that the deaths kept increasing when the vaccines came out. And then the one area of deaths that really increased was the unknown cause death. It's an incredible number. And again, I can't remember the percentage. I want to say it was a third of all deaths were unknown causes. Mm-hmm. It's never happened before.
Yes. So Dr. Mackis has been reporting on that as well, because Alberta was kind of leading in these deaths of unknown causes. And yeah, really, really staggering, Ken.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for what you've done.
By the way, do you remember when like the vaccine first came out and there was like a race war about it? Because it was only for like, not in real life, not one human brought it up to me once, but on TV, when a vaccine first came out, a guy from the CDC goes on the news and goes, "Good news, everybody, we just emergency approved a new vaccine for COVID-19. And I think African-Americans should have first access to it." And it just started like a whole cable race wars. And I was like, what black people do you guys know? They're going to fall for that. Good news, black people. We just emergency approved. Like really fast. A brand new vaccine. And you get to try it first.
You're listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online.
There's one aspect of the entire affair that struck me, and that is that for the first time we were witnessing premiers and the prime minister come out and showcase a medical officer of health who would express their viewpoint regarding the expert opinion and what people must do. And the premier or the prime minister would be sitting there nodding with their mask on and after they've washed their hands in the holy water of alcohol and expressing their viewpoint. I found it an abrogation of responsibility and duty on the part of the politicians to put forward a civilian medical officer of health who, yes, has powers under law. I mean, if I was premier, I would go in front of everybody, because the buck stops here, and say, I have had this advice from our medical officer of health, and this is what I'm doing in response. Instead of that, what did they do? They sat behind the medical officer of health. What's your opinion on that?
Well, you're absolutely right. Government leaders, by and large, abrogated their responsibility. Sir Winston Churchill actually summed it up very nicely in very few words, as he often did. He said, experts on tap, not on top. In other words, you need to have expertise and experts available to you if you're a leader of government, if you're a political leader. But ultimately, it's your decision what choices to make. And there were costs and benefits to every choice being made about the government response to COVID. But the people who are politically responsible for the costs and the benefits were not making these choices. It was delegated and ceded to a bunch of people with narrow training and a narrow focus who never asked the questions about what collateral damage to society their decisions about such things as lockdowns were going to cause. I think we expect our government leaders to be people who don't panic when they're faced with significant societal problems. They should keep their heads screwed on and, you know, not run around panicking. But that's what they virtually all did. I'm not aware of any cost-benefit analysis, which is a standard tool of government to decide on policy choices, being done throughout this period or even since. Because most of the political leaders who were in place during the COVID crisis are still in place, federally, provincially, and they have to know that they're not going to look good if a proper analysis was done of the costs and benefits of their choices during this period. Consequently, the public's being deprived of learning lessons about how well the COVID crisis was managed by government or how badly it was mismanaged.
So we were betrayed by all institutions, all politicians, and abetted by the press, which receives funding from the federal government. I don't know that there's any particular press out there that you can mention that does not receive handouts from the government. And of course, anybody who's been in politics long enough knows that he who pays the piper calls the tune when it comes to the press.
Well, the ones that don't parrot the government line, like Rebel News, they've been refused any of the subsidy money. So that subsidy money to the press, you know, it's dressed up as, oh, they need to, you know, adjust, poor business models are not surviving very well on the internet and so on. It's actually to buy loyalty. And in fact, it is buying loyalty.
It is. I think that everybody remembers, for example, the Toronto Star front page. Now, Toronto Star was actually started way back as a mouthpiece for the Liberal Party of Canada. It still is, even though at one point in time it actually endorsed the NDP. But the front page was shocking. Now, you know what I'm talking about. Do you want to describe it?
Yeah, I think you're able to put it up for the people who are viewing to see what I'm talking about. This is actually a photographic copy of the Toronto Star front page, August 26, 2021. Some people may remember this. I was shocked to my bootstraps when I saw it because it's basically a hate screed. The opinion writer, this is on right up there on the front page. I'll read the whole headline. In great big letters, if an unvaccinated person catches it from someone who is vaccinated, boo-hoo, too bad. I have no empathy left for the willfully unvaccinated. Let them die. I honestly don't care if they die from COVID, not even a little bit. Unvaccinated patients do not deserve ICU beds, and so on and so forth. If that isn't an example of hate speech that deserves to be prosecuted, then I don't know what is.
There's such a thing as balance in reporting. And as a matter of fact, there's a voluntary organization of newspaper owners and editors that make sure that they are abiding by journalistic standards of balanced reporting. If they have one opinion, they're supposed to get another opinion so that people can make up their own minds. This, in my estimation, was completely lacking when it came to the lockdowns and to the measures imposed by the state on the people of Canada. The news on television, radio, and in the press was all one-sided. There was no dissenting viewpoint. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And you're touching on one of the ways to recognize fake news. And one of the hallmarks of fake news and fake news stories is they only quote one side. CBC, to take them as an example, has pretty much abandoned the previous journalistic principle that you tell both sides of a story, the idea of balance. What you get from CBC and many other mainstream outlets is experts say, and then the preferred narrative from the experts, and you can always find an expert to say anything you want them to say, follows, but there's never any contrasting or opposing critical expert viewpoint quoted. In other words, it's designed to make it appear as if there's a consensus amongst experts and nobody else has a different view. That is a hallmark of fake news, and we were made the victims of fake news all the way through this, including by the CBC. We were talking earlier about, you know, how the press has betrayed Canadians and the censorship industrial complex. Just to focus on CBC in particular, there's excellent testimony by Marion Klawak, who is a longtime accomplished reporter in Winnipeg, and by Rodney Palmer. And if anyone wants to know about how thoroughly the CBC has bought into and wants to enforce the dominant narrative, those testimonies are well worth looking at. They don't take a lot of time, but it shows you the depth, frankly, of corruption and betrayal at the CBC and the need for their total reform.
I started noticing that something very different was happening at the CBC.
Who were we to deliberately withhold information the public needed to know and had a right to know in order to make a decision based on informed consent about their health?
They took an exceptional moment to decide that they would not be journalists, that they would instead be public health messengers. And the result is that Canada's national broadcaster has morphed into a state broadcaster. It's promoting government policy without question, while censoring, belittling, and shaming learned Canadians who dare to object and attempt to inform us of the truth.
Canadians were starting to see this and they were calling us out on it. All of a sudden, the term anti-vaxxer came up.
That's because this was not news gathering, it was propaganda.
They don't care about you. That your governing bodies, your institutions could not care less about regular Canadians. It's just a really interesting thing. This was as much as anything a class fight between regular Canadians and those who hold themselves above the law. And I can talk to you about many, many witnesses who testified to laws that were broken. But, you know, Canadians should expect nothing less from these representatives. You know, I always say that these government representatives, at whatever level they are, school boards, municipal, provincial, federal, they're like five-year-old children who you just let go in a candy store and then you went away somewhere and came back an hour later and don't expect to see the kids sitting on the floor gorged with candy. That's what we've done with our government. You know, I've been going across the country since the NCI report was submitted, and I've been talking to people. And, you know, a lot of Canadians, when I talk about ridings or constituencies, they have no idea what I'm talking about. You know, schools don't educate our citizens about, you know, how our system works, and they're not interested in it. So when you're not interested in it and you leave it alone for so long, they just do whatever the heck they want to do. So let's not expect the government to do something. You know, Canadians have to get in the driver's seat. There are hundreds of freedom movements, some really good ones across the country.
Do you think that Canada is forever changed because of what we've been through? Are we going to be smarter? Because, you know, they've got disease X coming. You might have to do another, you know, discovery on how they treat us during disease X and the fear mongering that's already going on about that.
Absolutely. They, you know what, right now, the message the government has is they can get away with this because Canadians think that it's over and they want to get on with their lives. But the problem is that they think it's over because they're not watching what's happening. You know, listen to what's going on in Davos right now. Some of the insane things that they're talking about. And you might say to me, as one of our members of parliament told me a couple of months ago, he said, and I asked him about the WEF, the World Economic Forum, and he said to me, "Ken, don't worry about the World Economic Forum." He said, "They're just like the Lions Club. They have no power." He said to me, "I'm a Lions member. It's the same thing. Don't worry about it." As long as Canadians think that and they're not watching, you know, you're not watching what's going on in municipal politics, you're not watching what's going on in your schools, you know, you're not getting involved in the election process. I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on where they call elections, believe it or not, by-elections, and a week later it happens and people don't even know what's gone on. And so that will not stop unless folks start getting involved in the grassroots. You can't believe how easy it is to get involved at the grassroots and start to take some of this over. But until Canadians do that and take that step, it's just going to keep going downhill because they're not afraid of you. If you're not taking your power, they're not afraid of you.
The data regarding the efficacy of the vaccines, the efficacy of wearing masks, social distancing outdoors, things like that were known very early on. Now, the vaccine, of course, didn't come along until maybe February of 21. But prior to that, people knew a lot of information about the transmission of viruses, coronaviruses. They knew, for example, that asymptomatic transmission of coronavirus was extremely rare, and yet they flipped that on its head. They knew, for example, what a vaccine was and what it was not. They knew the effect of locking people in their homes, and yet they implemented these measures anyway. What I'm trying to get at, Mr. Crosby, is their culpability based on the facts that they knew at the time. Can they get away with saying that we didn't know when, in fact, that we know that they did know?
Well, they can try and get away with it, but for those who have access to mainstream media sources of information, and that's a good half of the population, if not more, no, they can't get away with it, because it's demonstrably false for them to claim that. It was known before the COVID crisis that cloth masks and the like don't protect people against viral transmission like influenza. And this was an influenza-like illness in that it was spread by aerosol. That was known, established knowledge before this ever happened. So they lied to us when they said that you got to wear a mask to protect granny. That was a lie. They knew differently. They knew otherwise. They're still maintaining that lie, actually. And it was established knowledge enshrined in the pandemic planning plans in writing, signed off on, that every province had and the federal government, that you don't do lockdowns. That is far too destructive and not the way to deal with a respiratory viral spread. It's going to cause more damage than it could possibly ever prevent. Rather, you do focused protection of the people who most need to be protected because they're vulnerable. And we know, and we knew even then, that there was a thousandfold difference in the risk faced by the elderly group compared to younger people, including people of working age. So all of that was tossed to one side. It leaves one almost speechless when you reflect on the fact to which you got to follow the science, we were told by the ruling authorities, when in fact what they were doing was contradicting all the known science. And that's been nothing but confirmed ever since.
One of the most highlighted points regarding that was when a spokesman from the World Health Organization came out and said that asymptomatic spread of coronavirus and the COVID-19 virus is rare. The very next day, she was probably brought aside and had to recant all of a sudden. Oh, no, it is common, you know, even though we know that it is not common. That was really early on in the pandemic, about March, April of 20, that people started to think that, okay, what's going on here? There's something nefarious happening here. When this doctor, this spokesman for the World Health Organization, one day says this, the next day says that, something is going on behind the scenes that we have to be aware of. Did you have that impression?
Yeah, well, there was obviously a doctrine which was being enforced, and even when officials departed from it by speaking the shocking truth, you could see the hook come out from behind the theater curtains and they were yanked off the stage.
It's true. As a matter of fact, because we have the access to so much information at our fingertips, when they first started to talk about the polymerase chain reaction testing, PCR testing for COVID, what does anybody who's interested in this subject do? They look it up. They'll find Kerry Mullis, the creator of that particular process, saying back in the day of AIDS, do not use this test as a diagnostic tool alone. Don't do it, because you will find whatever you're looking for, especially if you go beyond a cycle threshold of about 25 or 30. You will find whatever you're looking for. And what do we find today? We found that provinces who are responsible for health in Canada were using the PCR test against the creator's advice and using it to diagnose. And not only that, they were ramping up the cycle thresholds to a point where you knew that it was going to find what they were looking for. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you just described what happened. Yeah, like here in this province, Newfoundland and Labrador, we were using 45 as a cycle. You're always going to find whatever thing it is you want to find if you're going to do that. Another point to make is what happened to the flu.
Yes.
You know, every year, it is a fact, the flu carries off tens of thousands of people, usually, you know, elderly people or the frail and so on. It's just part of the dying process of respiratory virus. But it leads to the conclusion, no, the flu didn't disappear. It was instead willingly classified as COVID death.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, they coincided quite accurately. I went and I looked up. I tried to find a paper which would tell me what the prevalence of flu deaths were in Canada. I found one from about 2000-2001, which should not change, by the way, over time, just as a percentage. And I took that percentage for my province of New Brunswick, and I found that typically about 88 people here in this province of 800,000 would die every year from the flu, influenza A or B. Using that statistic, then, we look at the number of people who died from COVID-19, 75. What are you to make of that? And how many died of the flu during the same period? Zero. It is so obvious that it's incredulous that they can get away with this kind of relabeling of the flu as COVID-19. Your thoughts?
Well, it's obvious if you're exposed to the information. But if you trust mainstream news and the CBC as your source of what you need to know about what's going on in the world, you'll never hear that information. So what that means is what's being called the censorship industrial complex, which is a term coming out of, you know, the Twitter files. Elon Musk bought Twitter, thank God he did, and allowed some journalists to, you know, delve into just how the censorship was being organized in Twitter itself by the government, by the White House under Biden and so on. The biggest obstacles to ever reconciling over the COVID crisis. We know a lot of truth, but we're still a long way from reconciliation. Reason for that is the government won't recognize the truth, and in fact, it wants to bury the truth. So you can't have reconciliation without truth. But it's the censorship and the propagation of the dominant government narrative which is getting in the way of that. That censorship industrial complex has to die. It is dying, actually, because people are leaving with their eyeballs.
True, yes. Mr. Crosby, I really appreciate what you've done with the National Citizens Inquiry, you and your colleagues alike, in preserving these testimonies and giving a true history of what has gone on here. And I'm sure it's just the tip of the iceberg. You may have interviewed over 300 people, but there are tens of thousands of stories out there that have gone unheard. But if this is any example as to the tyrannical imposition that our government and medical health professionals have imposed upon us, then it is truly a sad day in Canadian history. And I thank you very much for your involvement on that and for taking the time today to talk about it. Thank you very much.
I want to thank you for the chance to speak about this, but I also want to thank all your viewers and, frankly, all Canadians who supported the National Citizens Inquiry, because, of course, without substantial support from the public, we couldn't have brought it off. But it is there now as a legacy for Canadians, and we just need to bring it to the awareness of our legislators and Canadians generally that it exists there as a legacy for Canada. So thank you for doing your podcast bit to promote that.
Thank you again, sir. Take care.
Thank you.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. The power and influence of the independent podcast is an entirely new phenomenon in the greater course of human history and of the public's access to real and valid information. If there's one thing that we can demonstrate about this show just right, it's that we spotted the truths and falsehoods about the whole COVID scam and fake vaccines from day one. A fact that you can confirm by checking out our podcast archive during the period in question. And how did we accomplish this so quickly? Simple. For us, the science and discipline of epistemology serves as our primary key to discerning the truth. Since its very inception, that is and has been the distinguishing characteristic of this show, Just Right, from most of the other podcasts that are also working to bring the truth to the broader public. It's also the best reason why you should join us again next week, when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be all right.
Okay, can I just ask you, and I'm not, it's not like, there's no wrong answer to this, okay? I'm just asking how you feel. But I haven't been back in New York in a while. I'm just asking how you feel about this, okay? Do you think it's wrong? Is it wrong to invade the sovereign nation of Ukraine? I'm just asking how you feel about it. Is it wrong to do that? Yes? Yeah, the answer is yes. Thank you, ma'am. Miss, thank you. Everybody didn't know the right answer to that one. Yeah, obviously that's wrong, sir, to invade the sovereign nation of Ukraine. But did it cure COVID? Kinda, a little, hey. Now, credit where credit is due. I wouldn't have thought that would be the cure.